Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
I'm joined today by Zach Reynolds as we record another Squared Away episode. We discuss the madness around GameStop, Reddit, and Robinhood in the hopes we can bring some clarity to a wild topic that has captured the attention of so many people.
Man, what a crazy week, Dexter. I'm so excited to do these Squared Away episodes as needed. And for those of you that haven't seen it yet, Dexter wrote a post that we put up on the website under our resources page. And we wrote it on the day the GameStop madness kind of all went down. So it was kind of our initial reaction. This podcast will be linked at the bottom of that page as well. As always, you can find these podcasts on our resources pages or through your preferred platform. So please continue to listen and subscribe and send us feedback as needed. So I'm excited for this one.
I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Zach, the combined market caps of AMC, BlackBerry, Express, Cost, GameStop, and Bed Bath & Beyond as of yesterday was $34 billion. That is $7 billion less than Kraft Heinz Company. So in that vein, what aspect of this story is the most fascinating or impactful to you?
So from a market cap weighted investor standpoint, it's really not meaningful at all. And I think that's the fascinating thing when you look at those numbers. It just doesn't matter all that much. However, it's super fascinating from every other angle. And we've gotten some amazing internet memes out of it. So it's been really fun for me.
Is it fair to just group all of these together as the Reddit meme stocks and more or less just focus on GameStop and use that as a proxy for all of them?
I think that's totally fair.
And there's some terms that we're going to maybe use and need to define. So Tyler, if you would just kind of stop us, have us elaborate, but we definitely need to define short selling. So
good,
Zach,
good call.
If you would, what is short selling for the purposes of this discussion?
Sure. So just think about buying a stock, right? When you buy a stock, you hope to buy low and sell high, right? If you think about your gains, they're potentially unlimited, right? Think about Tesla investors. They've experienced the good side of that. When you buy a stock, your downside is limited to losing all your money, right? That would be a bad outcome, but you lose 100%.
So, and you are saying 100% of your initial investment.
Exactly. Assuming you don't buy more. So short selling works the opposite way, right? There's a stock that is trading at $100. You think it maybe is only worth 50. You short the stock. If it goes down to 50, you buy it back and you earn that $50 in profit. The problem kind of comes in because the risk and return are flipped there. Your upside when you're shorting a stock, and that's a confusing way to say it, but your profit potential is capped if the stock goes down to zero. That's the most amount of money you can make. Your loss, though, is potentially unlimited. And that's what, using GameStop as an example, these hedge funds that, you know, shorted a stock that was at $10 and they thought it was going to go to zero, which it still may. But the Reddit people figured out that you had so much short interest that they could create what's called a short squeeze by buying the stock, by buying call options. And the stock can go up an unlimited amount. And so these hedge funds ended up losing not 100% of their investment, but multiples of 100% of their investment.
How did the Reddit users understand or realize that there was a short position? Is that public knowledge? Is that something that somebody dug deep for? That part fascinates me.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Somebody took that time.
So you can, short interest is a publicly available number. You can go get it if you have a Bloomberg terminal like we do here, or I think you can probably find it on Yahoo Finance. And, you know, one of the interesting things about this whole phenomenon to me is a lot of times Wall Street looks down on retail investors, right? They think they're unsophisticated, you know, they lose money over time. And there's some good reason for that that line of thinking. But I think this has shown that there are a lot of smart retail investors out there. You had people on the Reddit board who put out, in some cases, a fundamental case for a turnaround for GameStop. You know, whether we would agree with that or not, I'm not sure. But then I think you also had people who recognize what a short squeeze is, the likelihood that you could create a short squeeze in GameStop, and then got enough other people to buy into that thesis that they took action. And one of the interesting questions is, some people would argue that that is potentially market manipulation. I'm sympathetic to the view that Wall Street analysts come out with a price target, they put out a thesis, and then if people go buy based on that thesis, that's totally normal. That's the way things work. Hedge funds also have what's called idea dinners, where they go out and they do the exact same thing that the Roaring Kitty, one of the user names for the Reddit, one of the main Reddit guys who
instigated
this. That
is his YouTube. His you, Reddit Dexter, name is unpronounceable.
Unpronounceable on a family podcast like Charting the Course.
So, you can go search for that one.
Deep Value was part of it, but I won't say the word in the middle.
So there's a few angles to this story, but one that has been painted is sort of that it's Wall Street versus the little guy and the retail investor. What are your thoughts on that? So definitely with some angles of, I would call them conspiracy theories at this point, that Robinhood shut trading down to prevent the little guy from making money. What happened there, Zach?
Yeah, there's a lot of angles to this. So I think the place I would start, and I've already said a little bit, you've got to give credit to the retail traders a little bit. There are a lot of regulations out there that say if you're not an accredited investor, so if you don't have $1 million for our purposes, there are other tests there as well, you can't invest in a private equity offering because you're not deemed to be sophisticated enough. And there's other definitions, qualified purchasers of $5 million+. And so the idea seems to be the more money you have, the more we assume you're sophisticated and know about investing. You know, we know from working with lots of wealthy clients, some of our clients are incredibly sophisticated when it comes to financial markets. Some of them were just amazing business people at their business, but they've never really followed financial markets. They couldn't tell you an iron condor from a California condor, right? Iron condor is an option strategy. A California condor is
a bird.
Thank you, Dexter. A big bird.
I'm really glad you two are sitting here. This sounds like great birds to me, both of them.
So some of the ideas around that, I think, are being challenged through this. And I think that's a good thing. If I were a regulator, I haven't seen anything through this whole process that makes me think, man, we need to go pass a law to change something. And I'll read you a quote from Neil Kashkari, who is a Fed governor. He said, if one group of speculators wants to have a battle of wills with another group of speculators over an individual stock, God bless them. That's for them to do. And if they make money, fine. And if they lose money, that's on them. I think that's a great quote. I think that's the way we should think about this.
One of the things you mentioned in our 2020 look back was how capitalism responded to COVID. How does capitalism fit into this story here?
Winners and losers, right? I think the thing about day trading, it's much more of a zero-sum game than investing, right? We invest for the long term. We have a lot of evidence that shows that, you know, the economy grows over time. If we own a little slice of that economy, we're going to make money. When you're day trading, you're buying and selling the same day. Remember, there's always two sides to the trade, right? I mean, someone's selling that GameStop stock to the person who's buying it. Whatever the stock does that day, someone is up that amount, someone is down that amount. But again, the capitalism has winners and losers. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I think it's working the way it should. Just because people are bored and they want to gamble on stocks, right, instead of go gamble at the casino or bet on daily fantasy sports, I think that's an interesting phenomenon. I think what is likely to happen, and we may get into this later, is some people are going to get hurt by this, and we kind of know that. But when I read the Reddit boards and I look at, so that's one side of the trade, the hedge funds to simplify on the other side of the trade, I'm not sure that anyone is not aware of what they're doing right now.
What would you call this? Would it be an investment, a gamble, a speculation? If I were to have put money into the meme stocks or stonks, if you will, what would be the appropriate vocabulary to call that in your eyes?
Yeah, I think gambling is a good way to put it. And again, so there are people out there who will say, look, I had a thesis, right? I thought I saw that Chewy's founder joined the board. GameStop was going to pivot. Instead of brick and mortar retail, they were going to have an online distribution channel. And that ultimately is going to be what adds a lot of value. And the stock, therefore, is going to be worth a lot of money. that's, you know, an investing thesis. But I don't think most people looked at it that way. In fact, especially once we saw the price going up, right? Then I know you guys had this experience too. Everybody you saw on the street, at the gym, family members were saying, hey, should I get in on that GameStop? And the only reason was they saw the price went up a lot over a short amount of time.
We have a little bit of hindsight at this point, but what were my options, again, no pun intended there, for making that gamble? So should I have outright shorted, bought it, used a call strategy? And what were my upside downside potentials with those various strategies?
Yeah. So what I think a lot of Reddit users who were bullish for whatever reason, what they did was buy call options, which is a way to go long. You're betting on the price going up. Options have embedded leverage in them. So for a smaller amount of money invested, you get more bang for your buck if the stock goes up. And that also created some of the buying or the price increase in the stock, because when you buy a call option, the brokerage that sells it to you has to hedge that a little bit by buying a little bit of stock. So I think some of this is self-reinforcing feedback loops going on. Other people just bought the stock outright if you wanted to go long. The hedge funds were often short the stock. And it gets a little complicated when you get into the mechanics of how you short a stock, because you actually have to borrow that stock from someone who owns it. And there was actually more short interest in the stock. There were more shares sold short than there actually were shares outstanding. Some people have a big problem with that and think that needs to be addressed. I personally, after doing some research on it, don't think it's necessarily that big of an issue, but it does raise the risk of a short squeeze. So if you were a hedge fund and you saw the amount of short interest, that should have tipped you off that a short squeeze was possible and you should look to control your risk a little bit. And I think what we saw with Melvin Capital, for example, which had to take a bailout from other hedge funds, they did not do a good job managing their risk.
For our typical client, what would the right amount, with hindsight, what would have been the right amount to purchase or gamble on these stocks?
So I think a decent rule of thumb would be 1% of, you know, your investment assets if you wanted to have fun money, gambling type account. So I actually went through this exercise with a client the other day. He has about $2 million in his investment account. And so let's say we take 1%, that's $20,000. And let's say we were to go invest in GameStop. And let's say we were lucky enough to time it right and we bought it and it doubled. And so now he has $40,000 and we've got to make a decision at that point. You know, do we sell GameStop? Once we do, we're going to pay short-term capital gains. So there goes, you know, 40% of that gain. Right? That's gone. And then what? We're left with, $35,000, whatever it is. Not a life-changing amount of money for someone with $2 million. And Dexter and I, you know, we've discussed this. If you bet that small of an amount, it's not really meaningful enough to change your life. Maybe you have fun, and ultimately that's the purpose of this. But if you bet any more than that, you start taking unreasonable risk, right? That you're going to damage your wealth over time. So to me, a lot of people have asked me this, like, hey, are you tempted to go do this? And, you know, anytime you see something crazy, you always go, well, how would I go about if I wanted to express a view? And so, you know, Dexter, you and I have talked about that, what we would do. But ultimately, I told a client this the other day, I look at it, I think about it, and then I slap myself in the face and I go back to buying index funds. Because I think that's the best way to grow wealth over time. And, you know, I have an incredibly high risk tolerance. I'm a poker player, as we've talked about in the past, but frankly, this sort of gambling holds very little to no appeal to me.
So our average client, fair to say, $2.5-3 million on average. Do we have any ETFs that own GameStop? And then what percentage is that? Because to me, what I want to drive home is when we take the approach we take with our investing, we strategically don't pick stocks. So we're strategically avoiding getting caught up in a GameStop mania. And however, we still are exposed and still have some ownership of these random events.
Right. So we looked at that. GameStop was a small cap stock. It may very soon again be a small cap stock. But in the meantime, it's taken an interesting ride from small cap to mid cap to large cap. We do have some exposure. It is in the handful of basis points range. I think it's been anywhere from 0.07 to 0.2, probably at its high.
Yep.
The it's interesting to think through the mechanics of how these index funds rebalance too. If GameStop at its high when it was a $25 billion plus stock, that was large enough to potentially get into the S&P 500. So let's just assume it stayed there for 6 months. What you would see is the small cap ETF would sell GameStop as part of their quarterly rebalancing. And you would see potentially the large cap index funds start to pick it up. However, many of them have profitability requirements, which is why Tesla wasn't in the S&P for a long time. GameStop actually wouldn't qualify. So I think it's an excellent question that you asked, Tyler, because a lot of times people don't necessarily know what they're buying when they're buying an index fund. And I think it's worth looking under the hood. And then many times they don't necessarily understand some of those rebalancing, the index requirements. All of that stuff actually matters quite a bit. And it's something that Dexter and I spend a lot of time on.
Well, and what I like to drive home is helping people understand that, again, we're not, and I think Scott mentioned this in the last episode when we were interviewing the founders, we're not just going and buying a Vanguard index fund, and that said fund is not just randomly grouping 500 stocks together. There are still criteria that must be met. And then on top of that, we overlay our whole philosophy, you two do, as far as which ETFs we use, where we place them. So anyway, I just think that's a great point. There's so much more that goes on that I think a lot of people don't understand, or I think this helps them understand a little bit more of our approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does greed factor in here? And we like to think we do pretty well with behavioral finance. So, and since we're talking about meme stocks, is it okay for terms like YOLO and FOMO to be included here when we talk about this?
I think that makes it even more fun. If we're gonna have fun talking about stocks, let's go
stonks.
Stonks, as people call it. Yeah, let's go all the way. I think greed is a massive factor here. Think back over the last 12 months and the fear that we saw in March. Reasonably so. The market fell 34% in a very short period of time, the fastest drop ever in the history of the stock market. On COVID fears, obviously, a rapid recovery to the point where, you know, we have friends and family members who've made great money over the last year in their accounts, see something like the GameStop phenomenon and want to get involved. It is greed playing out, and you know, greed is good in a lot of ways. That's what keeps the markets moving. But you know, as Tyler said, I think it's our job to stand in the way a little bit there to help offset some of those natural behavioral finance biases that we all have. I think this will end poorly for some people. I think, again, most of the people involved in this Reddit trade know what they're doing. They know GameStop is not a $25 billion stock based on its fundamentals.
I've heard some arguments that people are not doing it for investment purposes. This is truly just a populist movement, and it goes back to the angle of the little man versus the hedge fund, and that is a reason for participating in the trade.
Yeah, so you know, people have lots of reasons for buying and selling stocks, and if it's your way of showing it to the man, I guess more power to you. There's, again, I mean, I'm pretty libertarian in my views on markets. I think adults should be able to make those choices. I don't think regulators really should come in and restrict people from being able to buy and sell stock, even if they don't have a good fundamental view. Now, I do think we'll read about a teacher who got a tip from someone they knew, put their life savings in GameStop at $400. Who knows where GameStop ends up, but it's probably not $400, and loses a lot of money, complains to a state regulator or the SEC, and we have hearings in Congress, et cetera. I'm hopeful, though, that doesn't necessarily lead to new regulation. I'm not sure what regulation I can come up with that would prevent that problem from happening without going further toward restricting what retail investors are able to do. And I think that's the wrong direction.
Along the lines of losing money, we've heard clients talking about asking, is this similar to the dot-com bubble? What would be your response to comparing and contrasting this market and game and the Reddit stocks versus the tech bubble in the late 90s?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting comparison. I admittedly was not managing money during the tech bubble. I was in high school. So I've talked to David Stanley, for example, our CEO, who was managing money back then, to try to kind of get a better feel for what it seemed like back then. And I've just done a fair amount of research trying to understand the stocks back then. I think when you look at mega cap tech stocks today, they're entirely different than what you saw back in 1999. Many of them, Amazon, Apple, et cetera, have huge revenues. They're hugely profitable. Whereas you saw companies back in 1999 going public with very little revenue and certainly no profit. Some of them, as Dexter and I were looking back, went out of business within 6 or 8 months of IPOing at billion-dollar valuations. I don't think we're seeing anything like that. And the number that really stuck out to me, you did a great job, Dexter, earlier showing the market cap of these Reddit stocks is less than, even when you combine them, less than Kraft Heinz. When the tech bubble burst, $5 trillion with a T, dollars worth of value was destroyed out of the market. We are not talking about anywhere near those dollar amounts today. I think one thing that people are concerned about is, are these Reddit stocks, are they symptomatic of bubbly valuations? And I think we won't know that until this history is written, and we'll see how this all turns out. If you saw a lot of selling in these names, could it create some contagion and go over to the rest of the market? What you've seen so far, though, is in fact the exact opposite. You're seeing the days where GameStop's really rallied, the broader market's actually sold off. As we're recording this, GameStop is down 60%. Today, the broader market is up 1% or 2%. I don't think we're seeing signs yet that this is emblematic of a huge problem in the market writ large. However, the last thing I'll say on this, I think you look at what the Federal Reserve did. I think you look at cheap, easy money, and you look at people having stimulus checks, or stimmies, as they call them on Reddit, that can lead to aggressive buying of assets. And so I think it's something, you know, to keep an eye on. But as with our investment process and philosophy so far, I feel very good about where we are.
I'm going to ask you how you think this ends. But before I do, is there anything else that you would like to touch on? Because again, there's so many angles, and this story is incredibly fascinating. If you can debate the impact, but it's hard to argue the fascination that GameStop has created with the general public.
Agreed. And you know, some of that may be very good in the long run. I mean,
yeah.
If people become more educated about stock market investing or the mechanics of the stock market, I think that's a good thing overall. Yes. So the one thing that you guys have seen me get fired up about is this idea that when we saw Robinhood and other companies restrict trading in some of these names, that was some sort of way to protect the hedge funds because Wall Street's closing ranks, and that just isn't true when you look at the numbers. So I'll walk you through that here in a minute. But again, remember the incentives for these brokerage companies. They want clients to trade. They want clients to make money, ultimately, right? That's what creates more clients. You know, Robinhood, they've been criticized for the gamification of investing because they, you know, I don't personally have a Robinhood account, but my understanding is if you do a good stock trade and you make money, it's almost like a slot machine or something. They give you a little attaboy animation or whatever.
Deliver balloons to your door.
Yeah, yeah. So they make it fun. I think that's can lead to maybe some addiction issues for some people, but all in all might be a good thing.
It's nuanced is what you're saying.
It's very nuanced. It's different than Vanguard. We'll put it that way. But let's talk about, though, what's happening and why they restricted trading in these stocks. So when you buy a stock, there is a settlement period. So trade date plus 2 days. You go on your brokerage account, you buy the stock. Now the stock will show up in your account that day. And so as a retail investor, you might not even know what's happening here. But the money doesn't actually get delivered to the clearinghouse that actually holds all the stock, Depository Trust Corporation, DTC, until 2 days later. So when you have a massively volatile stock like GameStop, and you're letting clients buy it potentially on margin, which means you're borrowing money from the brokerage house to buy that stock, you run the risk as the brokerage, as Robinhood, that when it comes time to actually pay for that stock and settle the trade, your client might not have the money. Or for whatever reason, maybe the stock moved so much that and they were buying it on margin that they literally didn't have the dollars in their account. So what the clearinghouse requires is that the brokerage put up money on behalf of the client as collateral during that settlement period, those 2 days. So we saw such an increase in volatility in these names that the clearinghouse came to the brokerage houses and said, listen, you've got to put up, and they can do that. They're regulated financial companies. You've got to put up in aggregate, this was January 28th, $7.5 billion. So Robinhood is a relatively new company. They're a private company, although they plan to IPO. They didn't have that much capital, so they had to go raise money. In addition, another way, if you don't have that money, you can restrict buying, which means that you have to put up less collateral with the clearinghouse, right? So it makes perfect sense that they would, to protect their company from a financial standpoint and to comply with the demands of the clearinghouse, that they would restrict people from buying those stocks. And at the same time, so Robinhood did both. They've restricted some buying and they've raised capital to allow ultimately their clients to go back and buy. So this idea that there's a conspiracy theory out there is just, if you actually look into it, it's not correct.
I saw an article saying that this is a fairly common practice in commodities markets, given the extreme amounts of leverage and volatility that go on in those markets, and that it is not uncommon for clearinghouses to only allow their traders to reduce their exposure, which is essentially what I hear you saying. Robinhood, E-Trade, I'm probably forgetting them, but that they were just simply reducing their exposure.
That's exactly right. And we all do this. We're all guilty of it. But when you sign up for a brokerage account, you click, I agree, right? None of us have ever read the terms and conditions. They have the right within their contract to restrict buying and to protect themselves. And indeed, they must do that, or they're going to be hearing from the SEC on the other side.
My dad talks about whenever he and my mom will potentially have a discussion, he eventually just says, I agree. It's sort of like you just click, I agree, and move on, because you got to get your account open and you got to move on to something else.
That's right.
It's a very, very wise man.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
So you've got, you know, a combination of you know, in many cases, Robinhood's very popular with younger investors, teenagers in some cases, 18, 19-year-olds who've never bought and sold stocks. Like, it's not necessarily their fault that they don't know all these things, but this is, again, this is a great learning opportunity for a lot of people to understand a little bit better.
And it comes back to your argument about regulators allowing adults to make decisions.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, getting to your question of how this all ends, a lot of people are going to lose some money in this. Some people are going to lose a lot of money. Some people have made a lot of money. Again, we'll go back to Roaring Kitty, who posted his...
no better way to wrap this up than right. With Roaring Kitty.
but he was the one who posted on Reddit $53,000 investment, mostly in call options. He started back in September of 2019, I believe. So he's a true believer. He's a long-term holder. So he was buying out of the money, long-dated call options. And I know at one point, it was worth, I think, over $30 million, that $53,000 investment. And that's what is an eye-popping number for a lot of people and has pulled them in and gained their interest. I'm very curious to see when this is, if he'll post his brokerage statement, like, has he sold any?
Right.
Did he make any money? Like, at what point does he kind of pull the trigger and get out to some extent? I'm very curious. It'll be kind of funny to me if there was all this buying and selling and ultimately no one really made all that much money. The other thing that's interesting to think about is GameStop as an actual company, which it's very easy to overlook that there's a real company that is watching their stock price go absolutely nuts. A good thing, and it's unclear to me at this point if they were able to do it, would have been for them to sell some stock at high prices and get that capital, and maybe they do use it to build out an e-commerce platform, right? I don't know if that will ultimately happen. So if you're an executive at GameStop who can't buy or sell stock without filing in advance, SEC approval, you may have watched your paper wealth, right, go from 20 million to a billion and then back down again. Like, how does that feel? Probably not very good.
One of my hopes as I'm reading about all this and we're having this discussion is that, to your point, some are going to lose a little, a few will lose a lot. I hope it engages some of these new or younger investors to be interested in markets, and because those eventually will be the people that we get to work with down the road. And I just think that that is the positive side of it. If I can take a positive angle, is hopefully engaging or getting some of these people interested in what's going on. And understanding you're not going to build wealth by picking one little
they're
stock
going to move, like they're going company. To move from the Wall Street Bets Reddit to generational wealth investing. Is that what you're
Absolutely.
Saying, Tyler?
That's the goal.
It's an evolution.
I just think that'll be an interesting, I think, evolution to see some of these people that probably had zero interest in the markets and what we do and probably aren't going to listen to us talk about it because they think our take might be a little bit capitalist. Yeah, but they're interested. They're talking about it. I don't know. Your thoughts there as we wrap up.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that would be an excellent outcome if people learn from this. I'm seeing more, and again, I wasn't managing money at the time, but talking to others who were, you know, you saw a huge boom in day trading in the late 90s, and a lot of people thought they were really good at buying stocks. Respectfully, it's pretty easy to think you're good at buying stocks when all the stocks go up a lot, because it doesn't really matter what you buy, right? I think we're seeing more of that. And again, the Fed has a really tough job because they have to try to help maintain financial stability in a way that in an environment where Congress really hasn't acted much. But I think what we've seen in the past, certainly with the housing bubble, was easy money for too long creates bubbles, creates, you know, bad incentives and all sorts of things that don't end well. I've seen more of people going out and doing the day trading thing. And because stocks have gone up a lot, they now think they're excellent stock pickers. And again, this is not to say we're smarter than them. In fact, you know, our argument is we aren't smart enough to go pick stocks. And even though we've studied this for a decade and done it professionally. So I think people should have a little bit of humility. If you're out there and you're playing that game and you've made a lot of money, good for you. Do think about risk control. Take some profits. Maybe consider an index fund in there somewhere. I think you'd be well served.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week.